KJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. This is edition 320. And on the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation with Emil Jansen, who is an author, a musician, a community organizer based between the United States and South Africa. Emil is known for his work in connecting social movements and hip-hop culture, known as Emil YX, a pioneering South African hip-hop activist. He was part of the Black Noise Ensemble and has been involved in an initiative called Heal the Hood. Emil has authored a number of books, including Making a Black Noise Part 1, a book for youth, and he has also authored My Hip Hop is Africa and Proud. That came out in 2024, and it's a look at the African roots and global impact of hip hop culture in the South African context and beyond. And honestly, there are a number of different titles that Emil has written, so I encourage you to look them up. His website is emilyx.com. In this conversation, we talk about a number of intersecting points, looking at the capacity for art, poetry, hip-hop to create reflection, and it also having a healing capacity for communities that have experienced structural violence and systemic racism that is looked at in the context of South Africa, but also in the United States and beyond. And this is not the first time I've talked to Emil on the program. It's always a pleasure to speak with him. And I will just share now the conversation that we had on this edition of Free City Radio. In a way, right now, it seems that some of the recognition that grassroots arts expression and, you know, they're linked to social movements all around the world, that had some recognition recently. We're talking about, let's say, street art or hip hop culture. There was, I think, a feeling that the sort of recognition was something that was going to remain. But as we're seeing this rise in extreme right nationalism, a lot of the efforts to push for both the artists and community organizations that were on the front lines of pushing for, you know, cultural expression at the grassroots level to be recognized are facing this new attack on a cultural level, on a political level. And so it's a really interesting time to speak to you, I think, Emil, about your work, of course, in Cape Town and also in other parts of South Africa, as a hip hop artist, a young hip hop artist. You know, you were involved in youth culture in the context of apartheid, and after that, have made a link also to a hip hop culture in the United States. You've recently published a book. So we want to get into that, but maybe we could just first start by a brief introduction and also any reflections you have on this point.
I think when art is a very powerful tool, and I wasn't really surprised that funding got cut for progressive thinkers and artists, you know, because artists, they on the ground and they in the communities mostly. And so arming that community is almost detrimental to capital, you know. And so I didn't expect them to be happy about us trying to implement alternative thinking, right? And because if you look at what the books that have been banned and what's a DEI and all of the other things that are happening in the United States, it's almost a repetition to a great extent of the limitations placed on information in South Africa during apartheid or even during Nazi Germany's time of rule is a very similar attempt at erasure. And also it's a show of power, that they will wield that power in the same way, using economics, obviously, and the new platforms and streaming platforms to achieve their goal. And so, like, I was hoping it wouldn't happen. I was hoping that we'd, you know, you always have hope that all of the gains that were there, that there were, would be would still be able to flow the way it is, you know. And so what the other side of it is also that at the same time I've been writing a lot, and so I've you know, like writing the most recent like full document of like 1982 to 1995 of the work that I've done through Black Noise and through hip hop in Cape Town, but also paralleling apartheid because it was during apartheid. And then, like, while looking at that, like seeing all of this, I'm like, damn, it's like history repeating itself, you know. And you know, like, so it's sort of sobering but also sad, because I feel like I just told my wife earlier today, I feel like I'm stuck under the rule of like P.W. Puerta or John Foster, the apartheid guys, right? Because it just seems like that same energy. But it's also like a good feeling to like know that you weren't insane, you know, that you, because the way people sell it now is that, you know, things are exactly like it was in South Africa, which is the furthest from the truth, you know. Yes, there's going to be struggles, and obviously, like, the people of Venezuela are struggling, but the struggles that you as your sovereign country are supposed to be trying to solve yourself. And so I think that, like, has helped me to become a bit more, like, focused on the importance of documenting the past, but have it in parallel with the present, you know, like the because you also have a situation where the sons of the beneficiaries of apartheid are now, like, here, Elon Musk and Peter Thiel are both key figures in the United States government, you know. And their role, obviously, is that they didn't learn a thing. You know, they're just perpetuating what their ancestors wanted to do, you know. So I'm in an awkward place as well. But also, like I said, very sobering. It's an awkward place, but it's not unfamiliar, you know. And I think it's also a situation where I feel I have to speak about it, because a lot of people didn't live through it, and so they don't necessarily know. Like, this generation of hip hoppers don't necessarily know what was, in order for them to not fall prey to like all of these online, what do you call them, influences. You know, redefining and sort of erasing the truth.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of threads to what you talked about, Emil. So I want to get into them. You mentioned Black Noise, which is a hip-hop crew, b-boy crew that you were involved in Cape Town. And also, of course, you shared and shared community in different parts of South Africa. And you also, like, mentioned a totally different thread of South Africa, and you highlighted these tech billionaires, Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, which I think it's really important for people to... There's been some sort of writing and discussion about this link of intergenerational wealth that they're benefiting from and sort of perpetuating through their actions, as they are white South Africans. Maybe you could contrast these two sort of voices from South Africa and how that sort of speaks to the importance of mobilizing intergenerational memory, which is connected, of course, to the writing that you've been doing.
Yeah, I think there's also, like, the lessons that I'm learning as I'm documenting this is that these platforms are actually spaces where young people are getting the information from. And so, you know, I was just part of a documentary screening of In the Hour of Chaos that Sami Alim screened at Howard University. And while watching it, I was like, yo, it's not the first time I saw it, but, like, I was like, we need to like package this, you know, because kids, like, the attention span is so short, you know. So how do you take the best pieces and, like, put it on those spaces so you can counter the narrative, or even encourage kids to be like, how do they create their own space where alternative voices can can, you know, be amplified and be a challenge to what exists. And so that's happening simultaneously while I'm, because as soon as you speak to young people, you realize like that you're from a different generation, right? You're speaking vinyl and CDs, and they like, what are you talking about? But at the same time, like, there's those things that they, like, I feel like they assume that putting their music out for free will get global reach. And so when you break it down about like what the algorithms allow, it's within the realm of where they are. And they're like, yo, we didn't think about what's really going on behind the scenes. Like, who's really controlling the platform? What is allowed to be said, you know? And like, how's that benefiting us economically? So at the same time that I'm documenting, I'm also learning from the next generation, like how the stories, like if it's a 26-minute documentary, how do you break it down into 26 minutes? You know, because maybe that's all they can handle, right? and then give it in that manner, you know, with opportunity to then interact after shorter periods of time instead of waiting for, like, you know, here's a minute, let's unpack that minute, here's another, you know what I mean? Instead of like, yeah, watch this whole thing. If you're still awake by the end of it, if we haven't lost you, then let's talk then, which is already too late because they've, you know. So all of that is happening like in real time. So I'm learning from being around this younger generation. And they are the press the button and have a result generation. So they want to see that there's change. But you have to show them, you know what I mean? That it's not just about talking. Like, so my b-boy background makes it easier, because, you know, like, as a b-boy, you had to show, you spend less time talking, you had to do, you know. And so all of that is happening, while at the same time they don't know the histories that brought about these people, you know. And so you have to find ways of addressing like that past in a way that they can understand, and also make them real, because they are aware of the fact that at a certain point they have to pay for having access to broader audience. And so when you break it down to them that these guys have money from like the exploitation they did in the past, and now you also going to spend your money with them, you know, and that your very limited resources based on this history that caused your lack of access, you know. So it's a back and forth to a great extent. And they also like were led to believe that these guys like Elon are amazing South Africans who, you know, against all odds made it in the USA, because that's how that's been marketed and sold to them, you know. And so that's like, you have multiple conversations happening simultaneously to like demystify what these platforms have made so easy for young people to access, you know. They'll go to the extent of saying stuff like, yeah, but knowledge and information is freely available. And then you say, but who's knowledge and information? And who's the beneficiaries of this? Then they're like, oh, shoot, damn. You know, so it's a back and forth that our generation, unfortunately, like, we have to do in person a lot of the times. But where we can, I think, like, the young people are teaching us how to do it online, you know, which is not easy for old-ass people like me, but I'm trying. Yeah.
Well, you bring forth, like, a really interesting point, and Black Noise and your experience of being in person, right? And I think even today, 2026, the real power of people being in person, like, let's take, for example, the Gaza solidarity encampments when people are together, or the anti-police violence protests, the Black Lives Matter movement, when people actually gather across generations, Gen Z, Gen X, millennials, et cetera, and find ways to act together, whether it's creatively or collectively on the streets, that is also when power gets nervous.
Yeah, of course. And it always has been. I think that, like, I almost feel like COVID was a test period to see how much we believe what's online and how much we, You know, how much can be shared and be seen as normal. You know, like, don't go to the festival, you can stream it. You know, but when you actually in person, there's the human element that is completely lost, that a lot of young generation people won't even comprehend and find awkward to be a part of that environment, you know, because it's again something that's like the young people often when I speak to them, like, yeah, why will I do that? That's like, that's so much work. I have to like travel and go through all of this and then like stand in lines, and maybe I can just, you know, put it on the screen and we can chill at home. I was like, damn. You know, and it sounds, at my age, it sounds okay, you know, because I've been through it. But I have to remind myself, like, that process of, like, you're standing in the line, but you're having a conversation with other people that are attending the event. There's the energy of that moment that can't be, you know, even if you captured it on your phone, it's just doesn't equal the actual experience, you know. And so even when I was back home again, I like went out, and when I go back now again, I'm gonna go to like schools where young people are interested. Before, I used to do like full like assemblies, but with the attention span of young people, I'm like, nah, I'm gonna speak to the kids who really want to learn, you know, and then get that collective to benefit from the information, but also the economics attached to the information, because that's where young people, a lot of them are at. Like, how do I survive, which, you know, that's the truth of it. How do you make a living from the information and the people that have access to the products that are connected to the information, you know? And so, like, I want to go into schools, into libraries, communities, even like some creches that will allow me to bring, like, you know, colored in books, we call it, you know, that are localized, that have images from the community in it, you know. And so, because that, I feel we've forgotten to that extent. We've forgotten that we need to be present. We need to be. And in truth, it's actually a space that is much more powerful, but also intergenerational. Right? I take my message to a school. The kid goes home. He tells his parents, the auntie, the uncle, the whole neighborhood gets to hear the story. It isn't just like it's online and I'm just talking to one person. You know what I mean? And so we forget that the story gets spread. It might not be exactly what it was, but it gets, you know, shared with the community. And a lot of people in South Africa also don't have access. When I was back the last time, we were 4 hours outside of Cape Town. We were out to school where there was essentially no internet, you know, and just because it was a rural school. And the kids' attention span, and, you know, we were there for 2 hours, we prepared dance sequences. We had them write their own lyrics, and we recorded a song in 2 hours, just under 2 hours. At the end of it, like, they performed. We shot a music video. The whole school was involved. It was so dope. It was like, this is what we do in Cape Town. It takes so many sessions, you know, because it's seen as something that young people, because in people's heads, it's like, now we can't do more than one song for the year. You were for 2 hours, we created a track with these kids, you know? And so I feel like after I spoke to those kids, like, how do I bring them to, like, when we spoke to them about coming to Cape Town, they were like, nah, Cape Town is a lot of gangsters, it's violent. My grandmother said never go there. I was like, damn. But then I remember when I took kids from Khayelitsha to Mitchell's Plain, it was the same fear, because the Xhosa kids have never really hung out with the colored kids. And so, like, it's necessary for us to break that divide, for us to bring people together, you know. Another thing I did was we recorded a music video with kids here in Atlanta. I played it to the kids in Cape Town, like, when they have their year in the Hip Hop as Healing Festival. They were like whistling and carrying on. And I asked them, yo, do you want this? Because I recorded while they were watching. And I asked, you want these kids to come and perform with you next year? And you're like, this whole room of like 500 kids, yeah. And so I played it for the kids in Atlanta. So they're trying to raise funds to, you know. So I feel like that's how you really solve the problem. You break the divides, but you also expand people's idea of family, you know. It's not just the people living next door, it's like the community generally around the world, you know, that's introduced to each other. So anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but like, yeah, I feel like the in-person thing, especially coming from that history, it's still extremely important, you know, and to find a way to, like the kids were saying, yo, can't we stream it so that our friends can see it around the world? So I was like, yeah, exactly, you know, yeah.
So for people who are hearing this, can you just say the name of the book and just like where people can get more information? Because I think your particular experience of translating that sort of on the ground work in hip hop with Black Noise, from doing that kind of the concerts, you know, of course, at a very grassroots community level where you built out of, and then transferring that into an education process, is very interesting for people to learn about. So maybe you could just talk about, like, very specifically if people would be interested in learning about this book.
There's actually three that exist at the same time. There's Making a Black Noise, part one, which is, like, from 1982 to 1995, you know, so just after the first election, and actually just after I went to Zulu Nation Anniversary in the U.S. So that's the first sort of documentation, right? Attached to that is a book called Creating Solutions. So I took all of the lessons from that period of time and I put it into a book so that kids could, you know, find like how the question is with a lot of young people, how did you leave your job and how did you like give up like the safety of a 9-to-5 and like what is, and in the book I mentioned like the mathematics of survival, like how do my in my mind how I needed what I needed to do to pay the rent, to buy food and to survive, you know, and then like diversifying your income streams, to not think of one job, but to think of like, you know, like a diversification of like not only your creative ideas. So like a lot of rappers, they don't see writing as part of like the possibilities. You know, they like, I'm a rapper, I'm, you know, spit on the mic and record the song, but they don't see like the actually writing. You actually, you know, telling a story. And then at the same time, they like, in their mind, they're creating these images, which could be more than, like, it could be a music video, but it could also be like illustrated book, you know. So the Creating Solutions was that, like, how do people expand how their creative minds actually help them benefit economically, right, from a diverse, like, product creation, you know. And then the more recent one is a book about specifically the healing. So the more recent one is Hip Hop as Healing, which is with a couple of other, like Dr. Roberto Rivera from Wisconsin, another B-boy, Lacour, Fabian from New York. He has an organization called Hip Hop Education or Hip Hop Reeducation. And then there's this guy, Drew, that, like, essentially got the community to buy a flat, and they have a dance studio in the basement. So everyone living above them is basically paying for the existence of the dance studio, which is dope. I was like, wow, yo, that's... So, like, all of these people are sort of an extension, like, after, you know, Making a Black Noise, Creating Solutions, is, like, how did this help us to heal? You know, how did these... of all these years of experience with hip hop help us to heal our like deep personal issues, you know? So those three more recently have sort of captured like where I'm intending to go. You know, I know that there's been talk that our students should be telling the next Hip Hop as Healing book, basically, like the how we passed it from ourselves to the next generation. You know, so it's been that's almost explains this idea of passing the baton, you know, like how do you, take it back to what's happened with the apartheid regime and the Elon Musk and Peter Thiel, like they've been passed that like rich baton of hate. And so you need a counter, you need to have the next generation of young people that's countering what exists, you know, and also be aware of what they're up against, you know, and why they're in the situation that they're in. Because I think a lot of times, like, with apartheid, people thought, it's over, you know. And, like, people are very, like there's almost, like the same way you watch movies, people are like, yo, that's the end. And, you know, energy doesn't travel in the same way. You know, that unless there's an equal and opposite force, which there never was to apartheid, that energy is going to just keep on traveling, you know. So that's what the book, I think, is like. Those three books explain that energy, that trajectory of, like, you know, like the lessons learned, the how do we share it with people in a concise manner, and how do we tell our story of the healing power of hip-hop. Because we're also confronted with this idea that hip-hop is rap industry, which is... which is difficult for the kids who are in the rap world. They're like, yo, but I'm a hip-hop. And you're like, nah, someone is telling you one part of the story. Like, you're involved in the rap industry and the music to make money. You're not really, like, wanting to solve community problems, you know? And so I think that this hip-hop as healing helps challenge people. Like, a lot of people, they're like, what, a book about hip-hop and healing? Like, how does that... in their minds, because we forget that capitalist media has driven people to believe that rap industry is hip-hop.
That's a great point to end for this particular conversation, Emil. And, you know, to hear a little bit of context about your work across time. So I encourage people to look up those titles and learn more about what you do. We'll share some links about your recent project, Hip Hop as Healing, and of course, your other works going back to the project Black Noise in Cape Town during apartheid. So thanks so much for talking today. That was a conversation with Emil Wyex, who is an artist and author, founder of Black Noise in South Africa, and has been involved in Heal the Hood Project. Thanks so much to Emil for being on this edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph, and we broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CGLO 1690 a.m., also in Montreal on Thursdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and Fridays at 1:30 p.m. On CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. On CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. On Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. On CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. On CGSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. And on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Just look us up. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.